Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Nice.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the Event Horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the Event Horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of fantasy, science fiction, and science fact in all their forms. I am your host, Gene Turnbow.
And I am your other host, Susan Fox.
And with us is the creator of Boston Metaphysical, Madeline Holly Rosing. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. You've been on a whole bunch of times. I've lost count at this point.
But I haven't been on for a little while.
Yeah, you haven't been on for a while, and it's always great talking to you, you know, because you have a unique perspective, first as a creator and producer, but also as just somebody generally immersed in the genre of creative endeavors.
Yeah, yes, you could say I'm very much deep into it.
Rather.
Yeah.
And we always like to have you back when you've got a new Kickstarter. Ta-da!
Which you do. Tell us a little bit about this new one.
This is a special edition hardback of Volume 2. There is softback available. It compiles our previously published 4 standalone sequels, but the difference is there's a new 10-page story with art by Claudia Balboni, and pinup art is included, which I don't normally include in the standalone issues. And there's probably some stuff that people have never seen before, because some of the pinup art was I had commissioned myself, and others were fan art that were done over the years. And so it was really fun to like go dig that up and so people could enjoy it.
Oh, what fun! And they're getting paid for it, I presume.
Well, the ones that I commissioned, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So.
No. Absolutely.
Yeah, Boston Metaphysical. If this is the first time you've heard Madeline on our show, Boston Metaphysical is a gas lamp adventure series.
Yeah. For those of you who are not familiar with the series, it's about an ex-Pinkerton detective, a spirit photographer, and a genius scientist who battles supernatural forces in late 1800s Boston. We started with a 6-issue miniseries with art by Emily Hugh, and then did 4 standalone sequels. And we are currently halfway through our next series called Mystery at Pike's Peak. But because of delays in Pike's Peak, I decided to, people have been asking me to do hardbacks for a number of years from the original trades. And so earlier this year, I did do a hardback of Volume 1, which will also be available on this Kickstarter, of course. And then I said, okay, let's finish it up and get Volume 2 and make it all beautiful and pretty so people can stick it up in their bookshelves. So right now we have almost reached our 4th stretch goal. So
everyone
who has pledged to, because we were funded in essentially 12 hours. And
that's where you want to be for a Kickstarter, all right.
Yeah, it makes it a lot less stressful. Anyone who pledges to a reward gets, so far you're getting 12 additional digital comics. Ooh. And if you're getting the hardback, you're getting a hunter green satin bookmark that will be part of the volume. And What's coming up next, which we'll probably get to that goal probably by tomorrow sometime, will be two color foil embossing on the cover.
Oh, wow.
To make it even more pretty and shiny.
Good heavens.
I may have to up my goal, my pledge then, because that sounds just too posh. I need that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we were so happy with the way Volume 1 turned out that it's like, okay, let's just do this again.
Yeah, pedal
and get
to the
and
metal,
get Volume 2 out there.
Pedal to the metal. That's awesome. Well, and I really enjoy the stories. I mean, it's all about the writing, you know, when it comes down to it, of course. And I really enjoy the stories. And you can, too. If you want to read the comic, you can go to bostonmetaphysical.com and read from the beginning and see all of it.
All of it?
Well, everything she's...
Almost all of it. You can actually read the original 6-issue miniseries either through my website or over at globalcomics.com. Mm. And or you can download it for a very minimal fee.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you can have your own discreet offline copy, you know, so you can take it traveling, you know, like you want to go to the high desert where there's no internet. You can still read Boston Metaphysical. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
You know, take it on an
most
airplane.
Definitely. And though I don't, well, though Global Comics doesn't have Pike's Peak yet. So mm-hmm.
yet.
Yet. We'll see about that. It's always slow getting things distributed out into the wider world.
By this time, you've got this whole system locked down pretty tight at this point. You're really good at this. You know, getting the Kickstarters to like fund in 12 hours. That's like everybody's dream.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt your feelings.
No, well, it takes a lot of practice, and you do have to know what you're doing. As you guys probably remember, I actually wrote a book on it called Kickstarter for the Independent Creator.
Which I bought.
Which you bought. I will say it hasn't been updated in a few years. The core strategies are still applicable. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's the same strategies you're going to use no matter what. The things that have changed are the things about Kickstarter itself, the platform. Mm-hmm. And it is rapidly evolved. One of the big things that helps creators that they've done is create the launch page. And that was about a year and a half ago or so that mm-hmm. went live. So if you do not have a following at all, you don't have an email list, you have absolutely Zippo, you can use that to build up interest before you launch. And I recommend to people that you set up your Kickstarter account, you set up your launch page 3 months at least before you launch and share it on social media and mm-hmm. with your friends and whoever you know, and slowly build up that following. And of course, have what I call a modest funding goal. And, you know, if it's under $2,000, you'll probably make it. But yeah, I know. I actually learned about this from a gentleman I was on a panel with who said he had zero fans at that point. He wasn't doing cons, and he really worked that launch page to get people, you know, you hit that notify me button mm-hmm. on the Kickstarter launch page. And it also shows up over on Kickstarter if you click on, you know, comics and launching soon. And so it shows everybody that's up there. So that also gives you more visibility to the outside world.
And that's something else about social media. It took me by surprise just how long it takes for when you post something, how long mm-hmm. it takes to propagate through the system and how many people actually see it once that happens. Like with Facebook. Well, Facebook is... Facebook is a post-apocalyptic wasteland now, as far as marketing goes.
That's true. Because I remember pre-COVID that I would post something about my Kickstarter, And literally within 5 to 10 minutes, friends were liking it and sharing it and liking it, because that's what we would do, because we all knew about mm-hmm. the algorithm. So it's like, oh, Russell, oh, you know, Jessica, oh, somebody is launching. I need to go like it and just say like, go, 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 and awesome, or something in the comments, which they would like and say thank you. And then it would just propagate out mm-hmm. like crazy. And that doesn't happen anymore. That's impossible.
Yeah, that doesn't because of the, no longer works.
Yeah, no longer works. So what I generally do is when I launch, I use a BackerKit launch. I have my own email list. And then when I move to social media, it's like I'll tag a few people who understand that I'm not trying to annoy them, but just starting to get the algorithm going. And then I won't tag them again. Mm-hmm. And I never do the at everyone, because I just don't do that.
That's a bit much.
It's a bit much.
Yeah, it's something you, if you do that, you want to do that like maybe twice a year.
Yeah, if it's something really, really important. Extraordinarily important.
We've got some musician friends who do that about every other day, and I'm about to tell them, please stop.
Yeah, because at this point, we all ignore them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
They're trying to punch through the algorithm, you know, which is at this point built to suppress anything that isn't paid. Isn't paid communication.
Yeah.
And so are there other platforms that are, you know, better for it and that more people are looking at these days?
Does Instagram work better?
Instagram or
TikTok
Discord?
Work better?
I'm not on TikTok. Instagram, I'm mostly just sort of play on, and I do post, but I think the issue with Instagram, unless you buy advertising there, is unless it used to be, this could be different now, but it used to be you had to have a minimum of 10,000 followers before any links you put in the post would go live. I don't even know if that's true anymore or not. It could not be.
I thought it was 1,000, but still you need something. You're probably right. It's probably 10,000. You're the expert. I'm not. So,
so you have to put the link in your profile. So in the Instagram post, it's like, oh, we've launched, you know, la-di-da, link in profile. So people have to take the extra effort to go click, 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 as opposed to one click.
And with every click you ask them to do, the likelihood that they're going to do it drops by 50%.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
So, I mean, you really have to rely on now your own email list.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, BackerKit launch has been, I think, a lifesaver for everybody. It's very affordable. It's like $99, and it aggregates all of the emails from every Kickstarter you've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can send out emails on a regular basis. I'm sure you guys have gotten those emails. You've probably gotten them from me.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think we probably have.
You'll be getting one tomorrow.
I'm sure we will. I mean, I've been doing the marketing, whatever there is of it, for sci-fi.radio. And I have just been watching in dismay as our social media reach crumbles. Mm-hmm. Twitter is bloody useless. It's full of trolls now, you know, and spam bots, and that's most of the traffic.
Facebook is heading that way. I've got two new alleged new friends who've sent me, you know, invitations to Walmart. What? No.
You know, send them to a fake Walmart page so they can collect your information.
That's always weird.
Yeah,
I'm also on Blue Sky and Threads. They'll post, but they're really not for marketing. It's more friendly social interaction.
much juice out of either of them. I like Blue Sky.
If you want to have a nice conversation about something you're both interested in, which is good. I mean, that's what social media was supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
Like being social.
And I mean, you can actually have a conversation with John Scalzi on Blue Sky without any weird trolls going on. And it's fun.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, I really need to get more into Blue Sky. I mean,
they've improved a lot too. They have.
They've added a lot of features. Yeah. A lot of features. Yeah. They're making it work like Twitter used to, except without the spam bots and trolls, which is a huge thing. So far, yeah. It's hard to say when Twitter will fall. I think after Elon Musk fired like 90% of his staff, including everybody who was responsible for checking fraudulent activity and throwing the trolls off, it's just gone to hell. And it a lot of times it just doesn't work. Every time he tries to do one of those town hall meetings for anybody that he's trying to politically support, it crashes. So it's not, you can't use it for that. But that said, you know, where are creatives supposed to go now? You know, there's nothing left. And one thing I have noticed is we have listener traffic and we have reader traffic, and our listener traffic is about 2.5 times what our reader traffic is, which means most of the people who listen to the station are not going through our website at this point. They're finding us on internet radio index services, which I find fascinating.
And it's good data to have. And I know a lot of people, since podcasting is now a huge thing that's grown over the past decade, it's such an integral part of our lives. I mean, even to this, I listen to audiobooks now more than I read, because I don't have the time to sit down and read. It's very rare. Unless I need to, and sometimes I make myself, because I do, as you probably recall, I do reviews for Fan-Based Press. So, yes, I'll sit and I like to read some of the new, Kickstarter comics that I get, and I do reviews of those. So that's always a lot of fun. But actual prose reading is just, it's like, okay, am I going to read or am I going to sleep? And so sleeping wins. I listen to a lot of audiobooks now at the gym and when I'm traveling and things like that. And
and radio,
which has been great.
Radio doesn't fall into that. We're one of those like weird things that doesn't fall into any category, which is why I think we've never even been nominated for a Hugo after 15 years.
Well, what category would they use?
Exactly. We don't fit in any category.
Nobody
we're
does
unique.
The same thing we do.
Yeah. While everybody was getting out of radio, we were getting in. So, it all comes back to the same social media reach question. Creatives at this point have, I mean, it was bad before. It's really bad now. And I'm...
Well, maybe we need to up our game, our podcast game, because that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. Maybe that's the ticket, building the podcast up to, we're on like 6 or 7 different podcasting platforms.
That's true.
Yeah.
And we have awesome guests.
Yeah.
Present company included.
But we need to, I think, draw more attention to that. And I, one of the things I do note is that the podcasters that I know who are doing really, really well do their podcasts as video chats like this Zoom chat and put it on YouTube or Facebook and do it that way, and then make the podcast available as audio as well.
Can we do AI and of me only thinner?
AI?
Yeah.
I
could
give
me an avatar of, you know.
You know, I could actually arrange that.
Hot damn.
Yeah, I could arrange that. So, of course.
YouTube, I mean, you can make money on YouTube, and that makes sense that they're cross, you know, they're using multiple platforms.
Yeah.
I mean, that just makes sense to me that you would do both.
Yeah.
The downside is that, yeah, if you're going to be able, if you want to do cross platforms, you have to make sure you've got the video on it, and if it's just you, you know, I imagine a lot of people are just doing their podcasts and they're in their office or their room or hovel or wherever and just going, and they don't have to worry about how they look or what everything looks around. I mean, sure, you can put in backgrounds, but yeah, there's more work involved.
We've got the best backgrounds. I've got walls full of books. What could be better for a science fiction?
Yeah, the acoustics in here are fantastic.
You know, no, they are good.
Yeah, of the four walls in this room are made of books.
And that's as good as foam, really.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I mean, there's no reverberation. It's great. And then, of course, my office is, well, books and boxing supplies for fulfillment.
yeah. So I think it comes down to, instead of just relying on Facebook the way you used to, you have to go like multi-platform and do everything, you know, and make it all interrelate, which is so much work.
There's a work
so
involved.
Much work.
And then you absolutely.
And then you need a teenager to tell you what platforms are cool now and which ones are not cool anymore.
Well, I know a lot of writers have moved to Substack, and also comic creators have moved to Substack and do all their, and some, is they are making a little money off of that. Some are making more than others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've looked at it and it kind of makes my head explode.
Because
the amount of,
it's so
it's
deep
a whole
and there's
other
so
level.
Much. You really have to kind of, it's like Patreon or Kickstarter or any of these singular platforms. They're all built in such a way that they expect you to move in and live there.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. You know, I mean, I've been fortunate in that I started on the Kickstarter platform just like a year or two after they launched. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably one of the longest running series on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Comic series. Oriana was going to try to get the data on that, but never had the time. But just anecdotally, I must be in the top 10. That have been on there continually since, 2013, 2014?
Wow.
Yeah, Kickstarter as a platform is fantastic. And it's compared to, like, the difference between Kickstarter and GoFundMe is like 20 to 1.
Yeah, but those are for different purposes.
Yeah, well,
yeah, there's the branding. Those are, you're talking apples and oranges, I think.
Because
GoFundMe is really for emergency personal funding.
Yeah.
And that's what,
mostly medical
to,
or your house burned down or someone stole the trailer with all of your SCA gear or your music gear and it's all gone. And
yeah, we know those.
Yeah. We've had, yeah.
Yeah. And whether or not they intended to brand themselves that way, I have no idea, but that's what has happened. So they have since, I think, embraced it. And that's what GoFundMe is. And when you say I have a GoFundMe, people immediately understand that it's for some personal thing has happened.
Is there a little classism going on here? Because, I mean, if you're, you know, have a continuous GoFundMe, you must be poor. Or something. Yeah, it sounds like there's sort of an automatic assumption.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if some people misuse GoFundMe and play poor.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I've noticed one or two accounts that are like that.
Yeah, there probably is. I mean, I usually only will send money to a GoFundMe if I know the person.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if I may not know them personally, I know their work enough because I've seen them. I've interacted with them on social media. I may or may not have met them at a convention. But, you know, they know enough people that I know that they're real and the disaster they're going through is real.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's sort of like Indiegogo. I don't pledge on anything on Indiegogo unless I know the person personally.
Yeah, Indiegogo is, that's one of the other crowdfunding. Kickstarter's just sort of left them all in the dust, hasn't it?
But BackerKit is coming up.
Is it really?
I think it is. It's going to be slow for them. They have really done the back end of the fulfillment end exceptionally well. They have dominated that. And for a while, Kickstarter and BackerKit worked in tandem. But then Kickstarter realized, oh, we need to have our own post-campaign fulfillment platform. And so they're doing that now. And in the meantime, BackerKit, of course, has their own crowdfunding platform. And I know some people who've used it. They really like it. Those of us who have larger followings that were built on Kickstarter, I think would have a hard time moving over. I know, I think I would, because I wouldn't be able to reach the amount of people that I do now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not that many, you know, lots of people have heard of Patreon. Lots of people have heard of Kickstarter, but BackerKit is kind of doesn't move the needle.
Yeah, not yet. Not unless you've already been doing crowdfunding.
Yeah.
Then you know it as a back end fulfillment. I mean, their reporting is excellent. Their customer service is excellent. They are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it falls under, you know, you get what you pay for. And I have not used the Kickstarter Pledge Manager yet. I may give that a try this time around. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah, Patreon's tools have just exploded as well. Like within the last year, they've added all kinds of stuff, like backend fulfillment. They've really expanded on that, and there's a lot of new tools, which I need to take like a week and work out a strategy. Yeah,
I just increased my pledge on Kickstarter. And
I
made
saw
it easy.
That. Thank you so much. It
well,
was very thoughtful
I got
of
the
you.
Description of the book and going. You know, I do most of. I have eyesight problems, but and I do most of my actual reading on digital, so I can zoom it in, zoom it out. But the idea of having something that nice on the shelf was overwhelming.
That's one of
we were so pleased with how volume one turned out that we'll be using the same printer, and I have no doubt on the cover, as you probably saw by Claudia Nocciello, is just gorgeous.
Yes, isn't that something?
Yeah, I think it was the artwork that drew me in the first place, you know, because it's one thing to read a description and it's another thing to, you know, actually see images of the characters.
Yeah.
And just immediately, you just had to know everything about these characters, and it just draws you in, and you want to go read. And it's a terrific read. I love the fact that the setting plays such a vital role in the storytelling. You know,
it's as much a character as anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
It is. I mean, that's why I chose Boston. Though we do go to Philadelphia for a while, and in Pikes Peak, we're in Colorado at Pikes Peak. But it all fits into the world and organically, and where these characters should be at this point in their lives.
Well, but, that's Boston is where the civilized people live, don't you know?
Well, yeah, that's what they like to think of themselves.
It's an alternate history, though, obviously.
Yes.
So the political structure and the governmental structure are different than
it fell out in this world.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It is a parliamentary oligarchy. And to break that down for those people not familiar with the terms, it's essentially a bunch of rich people who govern the country amongst themselves. And they elect representatives amongst themselves. These are rich families called the Great Houses who control all major industry in the great states of America, as I call it, in this world.
That sounds...
So there is still a president, there is still a Congress, but the president is elected through Congress and not the people.
That sounds awfully close to what we have now.
Yeah, well, it's kind of worked out that way, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't like to, we don't like to get political on the show, but, you know, it's relevant to this in certain aspects. That's the great thing about speculative fiction in all its forms, is that it shows us windows into what else might be, and mirrors that we can look at ourselves, you know. And
but it's
see
not
we're...
about the past. Star Trek was never about the future. It was about shining the light on the present and the issues that we're facing.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's what speculative fiction usually is all about. Often the themes are a reflection on what's happening, and whether or not it's hopeful for the future or not is up to the individual writer.
What are the three? What are the three posits?
The three questions are: what if only, and if this goes on, and what if could is neutral. It could be what if, could be good, could be bad. If only. You know, that's a good thing. That's if only I had $1 million in a pony. If this goes on, the pony will eat all the dollars and schmutz in my breakfast cereal. I don't know.
Or turn into a, carnivorous zombie or something like that.
Zombie ponies.
And zombie ponies.
Rampaging the countryside.
Carnivorous deer with cuspids, you know, canines. Yeah,
I think I've seen a comic like that somewhere.
It's probably on Pike's Peak.
I think there's actually a variety of deer that has tusks, and they eat meat. Deer are actually opportunistic feeders. If there's nothing else to eat, they will hunt rodents.
Okay,
welcome to Rodent Talk on Sci-Fi Radio.
Yeah, it's just you go into Boston Metaphysical the immersion is full. You're just in another world, and I just love that about it.
I'm sure Tesla wouldn't have bad trucks in that world. Wait, wrong Tesla.
Wrong Tesla. Yeah, what one of the things that was fun was working with historical figures, and for those who haven't read it, the first six issues, supporting characters are Tesla, Houdini, Bell, and Edison. And actually one of the team of Boston Metaphysical is an African-American scientist by the name of Granville T. Woods, who existed in the same time period as the aforementioned gentleman. And it was really fun finding him. I found him while I was originally developing the story, and he kind of got lost in history. He was originally from Ohio, and I brought him to Boston because, well, I can do that. I'm the writer. And, you know, have them all interact with these historical figures. And no, Tesla and Edison, you know, do not get along. But, you know, everything else is fictional. You know, any of the situations are fictional that they're in. Because I do have supernatural. I have ghosts and I have demons, though they're not your usual demons. They're not from some hell mouth, and they're not derived from some Christian mythology of what a demon is supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I changed that all up.
Because you can.
Because I can.
And it's great that, you know, the supernatural beings all have their own stories. You know, it's they're not just cardboard cutouts, you know, put up there for the purposes of interacting with the heroes.
Getting knocked down.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
They're not.
So they definitely have their own agendas.
Yeah, they're not just ectoplasmic meat puppets.
No, I mean the demons I use as essentially are as a metaphor for slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
After all, particularly, if not to illustrate a point, what's a metaphor?
Smack.
Sorry. Reflex.
Yeah, and you see that the most in the last sequel, which is in volume 2, called The Book of Demons.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn a little bit more of that. And one of these years, I'm going to finish the trilogy, the House War trilogy, which takes place 35 years before the Boston Metaphysical Team. And it takes place during the House Wars, which is the Boston Metaphysical Universe equivalent of the American Civil War.
But it has
demons and airships and all sorts of fun stuff.
Oh, God, airships would have just changed everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, adding the element of
dropping things on the other side.
I thought the Confederates did use balloons or tried to, but it wasn't terribly successful.
Those were observation. They had just figured out, oh, we can get up high and look at the battlefield, and not really thought about how much work it was to get one up there and how
the lack of being able to steer.
You know,
steering and getting shot down
and all of that. Yeah. You know, just like the first aircraft used in World War I were reconnaissance craft. And occasionally one pilot would take a pistol up and shoot at another pilot, you know, with a pistol. And that was aerial combat in the first days of World War
I.
They would wave at each other as they go by, you know, as they went by.
Well, you know, they gave all the World War I pilots guns.
Mm.
And there was another reason for that. It's if the airplane caught fire, they could shoot themselves instead of dying by fire.
That's
why they were given the guns.
That's painful, but it's probably justified in a certain point of view. Ugh. 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 Well, that's cheerful.
Sorry. It's like these fun historical facts.
Neat,
yeah.
It's still neat, you know. It's still and now
it's horrible. It's horrible, but it was a reality that you could die a horrible death. And this way it would be less painful.
Yeah, wow.
That's why we don't like war, because war sucks.
Yeah, war sucks.
War sucks.
But airships are awesome.
Yes, as long as no one's shooting at them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's, you know, then there was the Hindenburg, okay, which is awesome.
Yeah, that was sad.
Well,
that wasn't in a war. It was 1930, I want to say, five,
oh,
six?
Yeah.
Although a few people died, what most people don't realize is that a lot of people actually survived that. It's like a hundred and...
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
How many people are on board?
I don't know exactly, but I do know that approximately 100 people survived that crash, and it was not most of the passenger complement that died. I think only a handful of people actually died in it.
My dad said that the Hindenburg flew over his school the day it crashed.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, he knows. Wow. He knew about that.
Wow! Yeah. Wow!
Which is why I had some view on the date, because he was very young, but he was in school.
And that has to figure into the commercial oligarchy that runs the country in the world of Boston Metaphysical. It's dangerous work to fly airships.
Well, yes,
you have people to do that for you.
You have people.
Yeah,
you have people.
Yeah, but those people are put into risky situations and risk their lives every day to run your stuff back and forth over the continent.
They're probably danger seekers, though, you know, adventurers.
Yeah, but that has to figure into the plots.
Of course.
You know?
Well, I'm glad you're finishing that trilogy, because we kind of got left hanging.
Oh, I know. It's been, life has been difficult, so yeah. I will get back to it eventually. I'm just not sure when.
Yeah, just
don't... But I actually pulled up here while we were talking, of the, I guess, 35 people died, mm-hmm. the Hindenburg, 13 were passengers, and 22 were crew members.
Stands to
And how many? How many total?
And there was.
How many total?
How many
people?
Total? They're not saying how many total. They're just saying how many were killed.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people that, you know.
Oh, fit. Okay. Here we go. Passengers on board that survived, 23, 39 of the crew, so 62. So they had a 64% survival of both passengers and crew of the Hindenburg disaster.
Well, that's better than one would think with all that flaming hydrogen.
Yeah, they were lucky.
And that was the end of the era of airships.
Yeah.
That turned the page. That was the pivotal moment.
Well, it's not like we're going to run out of hydrogen, but certainly out of willingness to use it for that purpose.
Yeah, well, you know, dangerous. It's hydrogen is obviously very flammable, and
well, if it wasn't, it wouldn't be good for much. Like, and helium is harder to get, and are we running out of it or something? Are we going to have to send to Saturn's rings just to get helium for our balloons?
It's actually possible to crack water and reuse the
hydrogen. Yeah,
hydrogen and combine that and get helium out of it.
Okay. Now you're talking about fission, which is a whole, you know.
Yeah. You know, but yeah. Well, fuel cells and all of that. It's not that hard to split I think it's
well, the sun can do it.
Yeah,
but...
the sun can do it. It's a simple
simple
process
thing for the sun.
Yeah, it's a simple process to extract the, you know, oxygen and hydrogen from water.
That's not even what I'm talking about.
Oh, well, okay. Anyway.
Anyway, airships in Boston Metaphysical, in the first, in Volume 1 and Volume 2, you see them in the background. They're part of the world, but they're not part of any plot or story point. You do see them in Pikes Peak a lot more because they travel by airship to Colorado. Our team, and
when you're going a mile high, it's good to have to not have to walk the whole way up.
Oh yeah, so you do see more of that there, but yeah, and there will be more scenes in issues 3 and 4 when we get there of airships.
Great,
and so you'll see more of that in future issues. But for the time being, we have to continue on with the Kickstarter for Volume 2 and get a few more people on board so we can make our next stretch goal.
What's the next stretch goal, she asked.
Well, once we get to 19,200, that means the hardback will have reached the goal for the foil embossing. So... that's why I knew. I said we're very close, so we're gonna get that. And then the next stretch goal is to get 6 more additional digital comics. So, and if we make that stretch goal, people have 18. So, lots and lots of good stuff. Cool. I like to do the digital bundles because everybody gets it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
everybody gets it,
and you have
it.
Nothing to ship.
That is correct. Nothing to ship, and everybody gets it.
It's hard these days. An awful lot of the things that we thought we were buying now turn out to be just licenses that can be yanked. So digital is shipping creative work via digital is sort of in the spotlight these days.
Yeah, but she's not going to yoink it like.
Oh, that's true. Like, yeah, it's not when you get your stuff from Boston Metaphysical via digital, it's yours.
It is yours. It is absolutely yours.
You're not just
and
buying
I'm
a license.
Grateful to the indie creators who have donated to that, and of course, I reciprocate for their Kickstarters as well.
Mm-hmm.
Often people hear of us for the first time because they've gotten a digital issue of Boston Metaphysical number one as part of a package on somebody else's Kickstarter, which is always great.
Yeah,
but it's a nice way for independent creators to introduce their material to a potentially new audience.
Yeah, that's true.
And I have backers who literally, after the campaign, are going like, when am I getting him? When am I getting him? When am I getting him? And I always say, okay, we have to wait till, you know, the money clears, give each 2 weeks, and then you'll get him. She was like, okay, soon, right? Soon? Soon?
Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Are they here yet? Are you here yet? And they're so excited to get him, which is great. I'm so happy they're excited to get him. And they're going like, yeah, I have new reading material. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is it here yet?
And it's like having your best, you know, the brains you love recommend something personally, you know? You're not just putting any old digital comics. It's something that you've read and liked enough to associate with your Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah. What have we got? We've got Cthulhu Invades Oz. That's an anthology.
I guess that's about the same time period, isn't it?
It's great. It's great. The Whiz Kids from DARPA, which is in all ages. Journey to Elysium, which is a kind of a diesel / steampunk. Miskatonic High by Mike Shea. He's a great guy. Mittens Space Pilot, which is also in all ages. And Morte by Kevin Joseph, which is really good. There's no dialogue through the whole thing. It's really done tremendously well.
Wow.
And the second batch of what I call comic bundle number two, we have Broke Down Four Dead Bodies by Travis Gibb. It's a lot of fun. Damn Tourists, which is hysterical. Alan Carter writes and draws that. It's essentially about four senior citizens who descend upon Hawaii and cause havoc as tourists. Yeah.
Okay. I can actually see that happening.
I was about to say, that's just... Yes. How could anyone imagine something so unrealistic? No way.
Yeah. No way. Alan is actually from Hawaii, so I think he probably has firsthand experience. A Harpy of the West, which is a Western, beautifully done. Rio Burton, she did the variant cover for one of the variant covers for Mystery at Pike's Peak.
Mm.
Hopeless Maine by Tom Brown, that also has a kind of gothic steampunk kind of thing. It's really interesting, and the art is very interesting. Pup Van Winkle, which is another all ages, very that's also really cute. I enjoyed that. And then another one called The Surgeon, which I really like. The art, I love the coloring. I might go color her. I might go steal her colorist at some point.
it's like Victorian housewives stealing each other's cooks.
Yeah, they usually don't mind. Lori Foster published that through Laguna Studios. It's a post-apocalyptic story about a woman who's survived, and she's like one of the few surviving doctors, and how she deals with, you know, just chaos. Really, really well done. But yeah, I was glancing through that when I was putting all the bundles together, because I already have a copy of it, and because I'd read it before, and I'm like, oh wait, look at this coloring, I'm putting her on my list. I have short lists and long lists of colorist artists, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bet.
And so that's the 12 right now. And then I have 6 more waiting in the wings.
Wow. This is fabulous.
I think people
stuff.
Will enjoy. No, these are all really good.
Yeah, it sounds fabulous. Ladies and gentlemen.
On top of getting Boston Metaphysical stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking to Madeline Holly Rosing, the creator of Boston Metaphysical. That's bostonmetaphysical.com. She's currently running a Kickstarter for the
hardcover of the second book. And it's very fancy, and I want one. And when are we going to get it? Is it here yet?
With holidays coming up and the timing, we're probably January.
January.
Okay. January cool. is a safe bet.
Awesome.
And I'll mail it right after USPS lowers their holiday rates.
Yeah, that's...
Jesus. Yeah, that's something to think about every year, too.
You have to think about these things. You do. Because they're already... the holiday rates have already started.
Ugh.
Yeah, I think they started on October 6th. See, this is what happens when you run these Kickstarters. You know this minutia detail about United Postal Service and things. You it was like, why do I know this? Because you have to.
Yeah. Well, it's professional. Yeah. It's a professional thing.
Well, thanks for stopping by. It's been great
having you
on the show yet again. And we look forward to next time. It's Boston Metaphysical, Kickstarter.com. You Google that, I'm sure you'll find the latest Kickstarter, and we'll put the link in the show listing too. So, the whole Kickstarter wraps up when? When's the deadline?
I'm going to say October 31st, even though it's actually the morning of November 1st, just so people don't. And I will have some things will be available for late pledges.
Mm.
But I haven't figured out how long. That'll only probably last for about a week.
Yeah.
And then I just have to shut down because I got to order stuff. And you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, thanks for being on the show with us. It's been great.
Thank you very much for having me on again. It's a pleasure as always.
You have been listening to episode 278 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for October 19th, 2024. Our guest this evening has been Madeline Holly Rosing, the author and creator of Boston Metaphysical. Be sure to check out her latest Kickstarter, this time for a hardback release of Volume 1 of her popular supernatural Gaslamp Adventure webcomic series. This show will air again tomorrow, October 20th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the upcoming Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the air times have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi radio and become a patron of the station. We are listener-supported sci-fi and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our business operation fees, our music licensing, and our server hosting. And they help us procure and maintain the equipment and other resources we need to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting continuously since 2009, and we are thankful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL is patreon.com/sci-fi radio. The Event Horizon on sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.